Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by nobody. Everybody right now is honestly traveling to Chicago, who covers the NBA and who I would normally bring on at this point. There was going to be another guest, but he got sick, so here we are. The Lakers go on to win in overtime against the Denver Nuggets, and, you know, they did that thing. Anybody who has ever worked a 9-to-5 will know this moment, where you're about to take your vacation, you can almost smell it, right? Whatever it is you're about to do. So let's say your plans are literally just to hang out at home, by your pool or your community pool, or you're just going to hang out and just relax. You can almost smell the Coronas, right? You can almost smell the barbecue going in the springtime in Arizona. visit Arizona.org or .com/springtraining. But you can smell your vacation. You're on your way out the door. You're just about to get there. And then you hear from down the hall with your hand on the door, but just far enough to where, like, you know you have to turn around. Just down the hall, you hear your boss call out, "Hey, really quick, before you go." Oh, that moment. That moment sucks. And anybody who has ever worked an actual 9-to-5, or even if it wasn't like a 9-to-5, we've all been one step away from vacation and called back just for that one last thing, and that was the vibe in overtime for both the Lakers and the Denver Nuggets. Fortunately, though, the Lakers were able to pull through. They won by a final score of 120-116 in Denver, winning both games in Denver against the Nuggets this season. You don't see that very often, especially from the Lakers. And you take that win. You absolutely have to. There is very little complaining you will get from me about the act of winning in Denver, especially given the situation. And now look, yes, Denver was hugely shorthanded. They were missing Will Barton. They were missing Michael Porter Jr., who is as an athletic wing probably would have given the Lakers some problems. They were missing. And they just traded away Malik Beasley, who gave the Lakers problems last time the two teams played. Like they were not. I think they were missing six rotation players or something like that, is what Adam said. And even the guys who were playing, Nikola Jokic looked pretty visibly tired out there because he's been trying to carry them while they've been missing all these guys. Jamal Murray was dinged up from an ankle injury that he carried into the game and then picked up a stinger over the course of it. And, you know, it's not the kind of game that you're going to kind of write home about at the end of the season. But in a Western Conference playoff race that might really go down to the wire here, the Lakers pick up a big game against Denver, who is next below them in the standings, or was the second seed going into last night's game. So, you know, you just win the game that's in front of you. And while it would have been nice for the Lakers, who were not shorthanded, it wasn't like the second night of a back-to-back or anything like that. They probably should have won more solidly, but they didn't, you know. And honestly, anybody who has paid attention, I said that really British, right? Honestly, anybody who has paid attention to the Lakers over the last couple weeks, upwards of a month, really, would have been able to predict the way this was going to go. And honestly, I thought they were probably going to lose heading into the game. I went on Locked On Nuggets with Adam, and he asked me my prediction for the game or how confident I was about the way the game was going to play out. And I took the Nuggets because I thought it was going to be one of those games where the Lakers were too tired to rotate over, and they left way too many wide open 3-point shooters, and the Nuggets bit them. And that's how it looked like it was going to go right from the get-go. Denver was hitting everything, and they were getting basically, it felt like, whatever they wanted. And at one point, I believe it was 42 to 32 in favor of the Nuggets. Monte Morris hits a step-back three-pointer and says something to LeBron. And I would really like to hear from LeBron what it was that Morris said. He probably won't share, though. But Morris said something to LeBron that stopped LeBron in his tracks and even got LeBron to turn around and start walking towards the Nuggets bench. Referee kind of interrupted, and LeBron made his way back to the Lakers bench. But from that point on, the Lakers would go from down 45-32 in that moment to finishing the half up 61-55, a 29-10 run. So, shouts to Monte Morris for going full overconfident backup point guard there. And the Lakers kind of rallied behind LeBron, as they have done basically all year. LeBron's energy picked up. The Lakers now, the beginning of the run actually occurred with LeBron on the bench. Caruso subbed in for Rondo, I believe, and the Lakers took off. We're going to come back to that topic here in a bit. But the Lakers took off and, you know, held on, even despite going into overtime on a Gary Harris, you know, shot. With 23-ish seconds to go, LeBron misses a step-back fadeaway. We'll talk about some of Vogel's decisions, really, over the course of the game. But look, at the end of the day, the Lakers are now guaranteed to finish above 500 for the first time since 2013, and are heading into the All-Star break with more momentum than, frankly, they could have. So I'm going to take it. Let's take a quick second to pay a couple bills here, and when we come back, I'm going to get into some of Vogel's decisions over the course of the game, some inconsistencies that we saw from game to game here, that has the potential to drive some fans crazy. So we'll talk about that, and then we will get you guys ready for the All-Star break. Today's show is brought to you in part by the Arizona Board of Tourism. We have been supporting them for going on the last month or so because they have thrown some incredible support behind the show. And anytime we see that kind of commitment from an outside partner, we want to make sure that we throw a similar level of if not more, support behind that kind of commitment. Arizona in the spring is about as nice a place as you can possibly be. Perfect weather, consistent weather too. It's one thing where, you know, every so often anywhere can have a nice day here and there, but Arizona is pretty predictable in the spring, and that makes for a great trip, a great easy way to plan a trip. And if you're going to plan a trip, do so around spring training. The Dodgers are already out there, players, so we already had pitchers and catchers report. Position players are going to be heading out there soon too. Games are going to start getting underway. And you're going to want to check out this, frankly, loaded Dodgers team. And you can do so early before any of your other friends so that you can brag to them how much better a fan you are. If you aren't into baseball, check out the food, the hiking, the biking, the music, anything that you might want. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining. Visitarizona.com/springtraining. Start planning your trip today. All right, so I was hugely positive in the first segment, and I'm going to, for the majority of this, remain mostly positive still. But look, I said in yesterday's show, in talking to Pete, that there was nobody happier for Rajon Rondo in the entire arena, maybe in the entire world, for the performance that Rondo put together against Phoenix, than Frank Vogel, right? Because it made it easy for him to just go to Rondo, stick with Rondo, and earn some political points with the guys who want to continue to see Rondo playing out there. The opposite of that occurred in last night's game, where you had Rondo out there. I believe he finished one of the game lows. I think Kuzma was a game low in terms of plus-minus. Rondo was right there. And his counterpart, or not his counterpart, but the guy who would have been playing more minutes, if not for Rajon Rondo, Alex Caruso, was honestly one of the more impactful players out there on the court. So just looking at the numbers here, so you had Kuzma was a minus 11, and Rondo was a minus 5. Danny Green was a minus 7. Avery Bradley was a minus 6. Avery Bradley got boosted a little bit there because of free throws late in the game that he happened to be in there for, too. He was kind of brutal. But the point that I'm really going to get to here is Alex Caruso finishes the game 10 points, 6 boards, 4 assists, a steal, a block. He goes 4 of 7 from the field, 1 of 2 from 3-point range, and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. He finishes a game high plus 22. And, you know, after the game, Vogel said that against Phoenix, he kept riding Rajon Rondo because he wanted to go with the hot hand. And if you believe in the hot hand theory, now look, Caruso wasn't shooting the ball nearly as well as Rondo was there, so it wasn't the kind of thing that you kind of pick up on if you're only looking at scoring, but somebody who has been around the game long enough, or as long as Frank Vogel has been, would probably notice the impact that, that Caruso was making out there, especially against a team like Denver, who was missing some guys and only had so many other players who could come through and really help, right? They had Gary Harris was available for the game. Jamal Murray was available for the game. And against both those guys, Caruso played not just the best individual defense, but the smartest defense and the best team defense out there for the Lakers. And that's where that plus 23 comes from. The Lakers, in order to get back into the game, had to get a bunch of stops, right? Like, if it's one thing when you're going to, if the Lakers wanted to go out there and put an offense-only kind of team out there on the court and then kind of swap buckets with the Nuggets, they could have done that, but it wouldn't have done anything, right? They were down by 20, I believe, at one point, and were able to crawl back into it by way of stops, and that's where Caruso can really help. LeBron praised Caruso after the game. He praised Caruso and Dwight Howard after the game. Jared Dudley gave some props to Caruso and Howard as well. And, like, this is the kind of thing that, you know, if LeBron is noticing and shouts to Dudley for making this known, this was all via Twitter, but shouts to Dudley for making this kind of thing known, because without that kind of praise coming from LeBron, I don't know if Vogel feels comfortable playing Caruso more minutes than Rondo regularly. And, you know, the topic of the last show that Pete and I recorded together was, you know, is Vogel going to be allowed to do the things that make the Lakers a better team? And if you are going to, if you told me, hey, Anthony, figure out one way to make the Lakers a better team, I would say, well, Davis has to play more five, and that opens things up for Kuzma. And item number two on that list would be play Alex Caruso all the minutes that Rajon Rondo plays, and then, you know, kind of, you know, move Rondo into the kind of role that Caruso played last game, which is, you know, break glass in case of emergency, and then come garbage time, let him carry the torch there. But, you know, for where the Lakers are now and where they're going to be heading after the All-Star break, the time for playing politics is pretty much over at this point. What Vogel and the Lakers have to start doing is rewarding guys for just being better players than the guys who are ahead of them in the rotation. And in this case, this is the most obvious case in which Caruso is just a better player than Rajon Rondo. Hell, Quinn Cook is a better player than Rajon Rondo. Hell, I don't know. I don't know if I could definitively say that Talen Horton Tucker isn't a better player right now than Rajon Rondo. And I know, like, you guys are probably all kind of yelling at your car stereo or your AirPods or whatever it is that you're listening to this podcast through. Okay, enough. We get it. We've gone to this horse, or we've been beating this dead horse for long enough. But this is the way that change kind of happens. And I'm not expecting anybody with the Lakers to make their decisions based off of whatever it is that I'm saying or whatever. But if enough people say it, if there are enough respected voices kind of chiming in with the same thing, hey, There's been this trend all year, and I don't need quotes, and therefore I'm not going to stop before criticizing the guys who give me quotes. So guys like Pete, Darius, myself, George Sedano, like the guys who the people who have platforms, the more that we kind of point this out, and then the more that the people who take in our content continue to echo that as well. Well, at some point, somebody within the Lakers has to listen. And you know, because apparently the numbers aren't loud enough. You look at the impact that Rajon Rondo and Alex Caruso have made over the course of the season. So they're, in terms of net rating, just sheer net rating right now, you have Rajon Rondo when he's on the court in 797 minutes. The Lakers are scoring 110.1 points per 100 possessions, and they are giving up 107.4 points per 100 possessions, giving Rondo, while he's on the court, a net rating of plus 2.6. You look at Alex Caruso, and he is second only to LeBron on the roster, where when he is on the court, the Lakers are scoring 111 points per 100 possessions, and they are giving up 100.8 points per 100 possessions. He is carrying, while he's on the court, a plus 10.3 net rating, right, while he's on the court. Then while when they're off the court, Rondo, the Lakers are plus 8.9 when Rondo was off the court in terms of net rating. And when Alex Caruso was off the court, they are a plus 5.2, right? And look, the Lakers just won their 43rd game of the season, so you aren't going to have very many players who play regular minutes just be outright negative net rating players. But like at some point, we are now 53 games into the season. They have to notice the obvious here. And it's not just a numerical thing either. When we come back from the break, I want to get into some of what we noticed over the course of the game and what we have noticed over the course of the season. So I just, to finish the last segment, I know it was thrilling radio. Or audio, whatever we're defining a podcast as. But I know it was thrilling to just have me list net ratings here for Rajon Rondo and Alex Caruso. But if you don't want it in terms of mathematical evidence, well, let's also take into account the eye test here. And when Alex Caruso is out there on the court, if the guys around him legitimately react or respond to the positive basketball plays that he regularly makes. And when Rajon Rondo is out there, it feels a lot like a couple that have been married for like 25-ish years and are just kind of going through the motions because they have to. They committed to that person and gosh darn it, they're going to make it through whatever rut that they happen to be in. And you know, for Rondo, it feels a lot like that because, well, Anthony Davis has regularly, you know, requested to be able to play alongside Rondo, and LeBron James has done the same kind of thing, and both guys have vouched for Rondo regularly, publicly, and that's the kind of thing where, like, if you are in that 20-ish year relationship and you find yourself in a rut and somebody asks you about it that you don't quite know, it's not like you're going to go out there and say, well, you know, we're in a rut. No, you're going to kind of speak up and say, no, things are fine. Things are good. We've been married for 20 some odd years and she's the apple of my eye or he's the apple of my eye. Never mind. And I'm speaking from Jen's perspective here. Never mind the additional 50 pounds that he's gained over the course of our relationship. Never mind the fact that when I come home, he's sitting there playing video games and doesn't clean after himself and probably could do more to help around the house with the kid, too. But other than that, things are just phenomenal. And you know, here with Rondo, it's the same kind of thing. Like, all right, what do you think about the impact Rondo is making? And they're going to go back to the same thing. Well, he's a coach on the floor, and he's a floor general out there. And Vogel is going to say, it's another set of eyes for me out there, and we can communicate about things out on the court. Well, what about actual basketball impact? Well, you know, he's out there trying his hardest. He's doing his darndest, his goddamn best out there to be able to pick up whatever slack he can be able to pick up. Like, it's just going to be cliche after cliche after cliche. But when you look at the in the moment response to the plays that Alex Caruso makes, that's the stuff you can't fake. That's the stuff that speaks way higher volumes than whatever platitudes guys will offer up after a game about a respected veteran teammate that they had previously vouched for. Somebody like LeBron isn't going to admit fault here. Same goes for Anthony Davis. But in those moments when Caruso makes those winning plays and he does the kind of things that gets him to the impact that he made last night, where he's a plus 23, game high, plus 23, it's the reaction to those things that you cannot fake. And you know what? At some point, Vogel is either going to have to recognize the statistical evidence that indicates how much better a player Caruso is than Rondo, but he's also going to have to notice, you know, those the bench reactions are right there for them to see when they replay the game for themselves as well, right? You're going to see guys jumping off the bench for the rotation that Caruso makes, or the steal that he makes that gets you an extra possession here or there. Those are things that, you know, on top of the mathematical and objective evidence that they have at this point with Caruso over Rondo, at some point they're going to have to start recognizing the human element of this, which is even the guys who were speaking up for Rondo, they kind of sort of know it too. And while they might not want to admit it, they at some point they're going to, if not admit it, they're going to have to address it. And I just hope that, you know, when the Lakers come back from the All-Star break, they address it in a way that you start to see those minute totals swap between Rondo and Caruso. And if they don't, and if the Lakers don't address it, and if Vogel kind of, I'm not gonna use the verbiage I was about to use there, but if Vogel takes the easy way out here and just chooses not to ruffle feathers, and the Lakers come up short of their year-long goals, they'll only have themselves to blame. And that's all Pete and I have been saying on this topic since really day one. Let's finish on a positive note here. I do want to continue to give praise to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He finishes the game, like in terms of plus minus, whatever, it was kind of run of the mill game for KCP. Well, plus 10, and he finishes the game only 3 of 9 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3-point range, but does come up with the game's biggest defensive play. He had that steal where Jokic passed up on a shot, took a dribble in, tried to kick it out to the corner, but KCP was there to get the steal. He passed it to AD. AD made a free throw and iced the game. But for somebody like KCP, who got crapped on, and I'm as guilty as anybody in terms of crapping on KCP, but for somebody whose perception was as low as it was for points of this season, the fact that he just keeps chugging along and just keeps making impact play after impact play, kind of regardless of the way he's shooting or whatever might be going around him. I look, you got to give the guy the credit that he demands. And at this point, he's probably top 4, if not top 3, most important Lakers this season. So shouts to KCP for his game last night. And then, obviously, you know, that LeBron James guy is pretty good. That Anthony Davis guy is pretty good. And hopefully, the Lakers, you know, last night was Wednesday night. The Lakers don't play again till Friday. Hopefully, those guys are able to get some rest from now till then, and really hit the ground running the way that they did at the beginning, or even if they aren't playing as hard as they were at the beginning of the season, they start you know, kind of fine-tuning the habits that they're going to have to hammer home come playoff time. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning into this. Thank you very much to the Lakers for sending us into the All-Star break with a big overtime win here over the Denver Nuggets. Pete will be back tomorrow. We're going to review the Lakers season to this point, heading into the All-Star break. And then we will send you guys out for the longish weekend, NBA weekend, that we're going to see. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.